Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, good morning, and Zubin Mahente. Good morning. Know you've been waiting. Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin, coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio. So let's go.
And a good Thursday morning. It is Dave Rothenberg, Bart Scott, and Rick DiPietro, known as the New York Takeover on ESPN Radio. ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. The new morning show starts just a couple days away. Monday morning, 6 o'clock Eastern. Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin. ESPN Radio is always presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us right here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Speaking of the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with our guests. All right, guys. We got Bart Scott. We got Rick DiPietro. Listen to the guests we have today. Dan Graziano, 6:30 Eastern. Bobby Carpenter, 7:15. Rob Ninkovich, 7:30. Adam Rittenberg, 8:10. Tim Bontemps, 8:30. Jeff Passan, 9:30. Now, if you happen to miss any of those guests, you can listen to all 4 hours on demand in the ESPN app. Bart, that's a pretty good show we got coming up today, isn't it?
Well, those are a lot of good ingredients. Now, you got to put it together and cook it, man. It's on you. You driving this bus.
I mean, I'm the line chef.
I blame you.
No, I'm the line chef. All I'm doing is getting the food in front of you. You guys are the actual chefs. Rick, you dabble in the food industry. You're a big-time chef.
Yeah, I dabble a little bit. Hey, let's just, Dave, because we all know your limitations in the kitchen. You're more of a pick up the phone and call people.
But I do it very well.
Yeah, you're the best in the business. I would just say this. I mean, one of your go-to meals is the macaroni and cheese. Let's just approach these ingredients like it's just a box of macaroni and cheese, and let's put it together and have some fun today, right?
But it's almost impossible to mess up macaroni and cheese.
Yes, no, you can mess up the macaroni and cheese. You know, don't be that dude at the picnic, like who brought this dry macaroni and cheese. You better have some evaporated milk and everything. I need 75 different cheeses, and I need a ton of butter and eggs. Listen, I need to have high cholesterol after I eat my macaroni and cheese. I don't know how you roll, bro.
Fair enough.
Bart's drinking. Bart, you're eating a mac and cheese souffle is what you just described.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what kind of mac and cheese you guys are eating. I'm a Kraft mac and cheese guy.
You guys
are like fancy mac and cheese. Just give me the basic, good, 11-year-old kid will eat it mac and cheese.
You better not be squeezing. Listen, for this show and for our long-term success, you better not be squeezing no Velveeta cheese up in this macaroni and cheese, man. Some cheese.
You tell me how to make my macaroni and cheese.
It's disrespectful to macaroni and cheese. But anyway, I digress.
I don't think you can mess it up.
All right, here we go. We have a lot to get into. Guests all over the place. Big 12 announces that they're going to proceed with the fall sports season. You know, it really feels like that their plan is to absolutely push forward, which makes you shake your head, Bart, that you have two conferences that are like, there's no way we can, and now you have conferences saying we absolutely can. Clearly, there's a divide in college football right now.
Yeah, clearly there is. And you talk about, you know, $100 million in opportunity to kind of monopolize the industry. You talk about being able to if these other networks don't have, you know, sports on Saturday, then in the Big 12 have it, then they stand to benefit maybe a little bit more because they're going to be the content. So people are going to be looking for content. And how does that affect maybe potentially what's going to go on with the NFL trying to take over Saturdays? Is it going to be a bit of a power struggle? Is it going to be something that's going to be regionalized where, you know, you think about the states within those conferences are going to take those games, and then the NFL is going to take over the big game? So now you're going to have, like, that fighting, that infighting, because it's always been a deal between the NFL and college for them to respect Saturday as college days. But, you know, NFL probably smells blood in the water, opportunity for them to make up some lost revenue because they're not going to have concession. They're not going to have ticket sales. Let's see who wins out. Let's see who the network decides to pick.
You know what? I spent a lot of time yesterday. I was all amped up. Islanders win. Got a big Mets win. So I was all fired up, and I was sitting there thinking about it because I listened to a lot, you know, different people's opinions yesterday. And I couldn't help but feel like, you know, am I looking at this thing the wrong way? Am I missing something? And you know, you try to put yourself in a position as being one of these parents, or if, you know, Bart and I were back in school, would we decide to play? And I kept coming back to the same thing. If you have a conference like the Big Ten, and this is low end, just looking at some of these numbers, we talked about it yesterday, Michigan, you know, saying they'll lose, you know, $61 million, Rutgers $50 million. Let's say low end, the Big Ten conference is willing to leave $750 million on the table, right? Because of concern over health and safety, maybe even liability.
Sure, certainly.
Doesn't that give you cause to pause a little bit?
You would figure?
One of these parents for a kid playing in the ACC or the SEC?
It's like, what am I missing, right? Like, what do they know that I don't know? Well, what we know that they do know, they have research on the heart condition. Ten, that's a lot. You talk about it, this is supposed to be a rare condition in the Big Ten, just in one conference alone, and not to talk about what happens in the other four. In one conference, we've had 10 cases of the heart condition. I mean, that would give me pause because that's a high number. And, you know, who knows how many different schools and universities made up those heart conditions, but that would give me cause to pause. And at the end of the day, is this worth risking my long-term health of my child? Now, I know we all take long-term risk with just playing football in general, right? You know, you could have knee surgery, you know, back injury, could be, you know, paralyzed. But, I mean, this is an unknown. We don't know the end results of this. We know what concussions are. We know now how we heal from it. We know it's about the healing process, allowing the brain to heal. We don't know what's the long-term ramifications of having this virus, and if you have the inflamed heart, how long you're going to deal with some of the issues. You know, I can remember, you know, we watching Chris Cuomo had it, and he went through it. He talks about his blood work still not being right, you know, months after having it. We don't know what the long-term effects is. You know, we talked to Todd Mache yesterday. He talked about how bad the virus was. Everybody just assumes that we're going to be asymptomatic because these guys are healthy and young.
And he had a mild case, and he was hospitalized for 5 days.
Right, a mild case. So, like, what's going to happen if one of these kids, God forbid, you know, has, you know, adverse effect or, you know, something happens? I just don't know how it can be so disjointed, how one conference can say, hey, we're going full steam ahead, and then one of the most prestigious conferences, one of the oldest conferences with so many resources. Just think about Michigan's medical department. I think people would maybe compare that to maybe Duke's medical department and university. You know, if they have some knowledge that we don't know, then let's get that out. Right? Let's put that on the table. Let's have this, you know, digested and see, you know, let's look at it from all angles and say, what are we doing? And is the risk worth the reward?
Yeah, here's the other thing, too. We spend a lot of time, you know, just in general. I mean, we've had these conversations over and over again about the NCAA and, you know, players needing representation and everything else. So let's just say for, you know, the sake of this conversation that the players did have representation, that there was a players' union. Do you think, and I heard this a lot yesterday, you know, kids are 18 years old. You know, between them and their parents, they're old enough to make their own decisions. They can sign a waiver. If college football was unionized and the players had representation, do you think that any head of any union would allow a player to sign a waiver that absolves the leagues of long-term liability in this kind of situation?
No.
Not at all.
Not a chance.
Not at all. It would be collectively bargained that, hey, listen, you guys go on the hook. You're going to have to take out some policies. And just think for some of these players, man, you know, that have aspirations of being a first-round draft picker. Let's just say Trevor Lawrence plays and he gets it and he has an inflamed heart. Then that's going to not allow him to start the season potentially, you know, at the right time. We see how Rodo Rodriguez and him deciding to opt out is because I'm sure he wasn't ready prepared. How are you going to prepare to run and exercise?
Well, no, you can't. Myocarditis, they say 3 to 6 months.
Right.
You got to rest for 3 to 6 months.
Right. So let's just say Trevor Lawrence is a guy who gets it and the team is going to draft him knowing that they don't have him for the first year. How does that affect him and how does he fall?
Well, right, I mean, you could even argue that if he had it and he had myocarditis and there was an issue, that he might not be the number one pick in the draft. I mean, you don't know.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. That would cost him, you know, five, potentially tens of millions of dollars if he slips to the second round because nobody wants to take him because
100%.
They don't know how he's going to recover from it the next year. If he'll
100%.
Ever recover from it. You know what I'm saying? If he's scarred for life, if he's not going to have cardiovascular conditioning because his heart is compromised now. So, like, at this point, all these guys that are high-profile picks, the university takes out disability insurance in case they have a catastrophic injury. You know, how does that affect what their premium's going to be as well? Because, you know, are you going to insure somebody or allow somebody to be insured that's going to put themselves at risk? It's like saying, okay, yeah, I want disability insurance. I'm going skiing and skydiving tomorrow. They'll be like, whoa, wait. You got to pay a bigger premium.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's different levels to this stuff that people aren't really thinking about.
Yeah, but people don't want to think about it as well. It's Rothenberg, it's Scott, it's DPHO, ESPN Radio. Let's take a quick listen. Bob Bowlsby, Big 12 commissioner, confident they can get the season in if players and coaches are disciplined.
It's hard to handicap those kinds of things because, you know, if anybody is around that tells you that they can accurately forecast what's going to happen with the virus. They're delusional. But having acknowledged that, I feel good about where we are simply because we have good practices in place. And I think a lot of the success of teams during this season going forward has to do with whether or not young people can discipline themselves. You can't stop living your life, but you also have to be smart about putting yourself in risky situations.
I don't know. Young people disciplining themselves.
Right, that sounds like oxymoron, right?
Yeah. I mean, young people disciplining themselves is a phrase that I don't necessarily think works in this country so far. All right.
How many are we dependent on, right? How many student athletes
thousands,
are we dependent
thousands
on?
Thousands and thousands to do the right thing. And we see that just people won't do it. So I don't know how you could think that that's going to happen. All right. Well, much more on the Big 12 decision throughout the show. But coming up next, the NBA outline, their plans for guests to enter the bubble and that decision in this league. We'll get to that.
Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahinte.
You and me got the best seat in the house to listen to these guys tell us about the most pressurized moments in sports.
Mornings, coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Our buddy Dan Graziano. Dan, good morning. Thanks for joining us so bright and early on this Thursday.
Gentlemen, it is my pleasure. How are you?
We are all doing as well as anybody can in this wild and crazy time. Let me ask you this before we get into specifics about the NFL. Overall, do you think players, GMs feel somewhat safe with the beginning of training camp with the protocols in place in the NFL?
I think the impression I get is that once they get into the team facility, people feel all right about things, that the precautions that are being taken at the team facilities are encouraging to people, you know, the testing every day, the contact tracer that you have to wear so that, you know, that beeps if you're within 6 feet of someone for more than 8 minutes and it can tell who you've been around if you do test positive. I think the testing numbers have been encouraging so far. So, yeah, I think early going and no one's been, you know, on the field really practicing and up breathing in each other's faces or anything like that. But I think so far, so good, knock on wood, on the way the teams have put together the protocols in their buildings.
How does that change potentially when, you know, school starts and, you know, guys that are playing that still choose to be around their children as far as being able to contact trace and being able to figure out who their kids have been exposed to in turn?
Yeah, this is the big question, right? They don't have the NBA's bubble, right, where you know exactly who's in and who's not. And you know that everybody you're going to encounter in the course of a day has tested negative multiple times. This is not going to happen in the NFL. So it is possible, yes, that someone's children bring home the virus from school and infect the family. That is a possibility. Now, you have to be careful when you're at home, yes. Is that going to allow you to 100% avoid it? No. So someone's going to show up at some point in one of these, you know, well-cleaned, well-maintained team facilities, probably carrying the virus either with symptoms or testing positive. And then the next step there, if you're the NFL, is going to be quick isolation. How good is their program for making sure if someone does show up, whether it does test positive, does have symptoms, that they isolate, they put them in a room, they find a way to get them out of the facility as quickly as possible. They use that contact tracer to identify everyone else at the facility that person has come in contact with and then isolate those people and keep whatever happens, keep the virus from spreading and having sort of a Florida Marlins, St. Louis Cardinals-style outbreak throughout the entire team. That's the trick. And at this point, yeah, nobody knows if they're going to be able to pull it off. They feel like they can. They feel like they've done what they could to prepare for it, but no one will know until it happens.
Dan Graziano joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with the new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Dan, do you foresee potentially more and more teams kind of doing what Dallas is doing, where they're, you know, putting themselves in, you know, in their own kind of bubble at a hotel or whatever it ends up being?
Yeah, I think you're going to see some form of that. I think the Saints have done something like that in terms of, you know, near where they are practicing, but It's an example of the players kind of doing what they're being told to do by the league, by their coaches, which is be as careful as possible. And if you can have a situation where, yes, you're sort of bubbled up at a hotel and you know everybody that's going in and out, and you know your group is being careful, and you don't have to worry about other groups that you're circulating among not being careful, then that's so much the better. You're going to continue to hear this message from coaches. We heard it from, I believe, Mike Tomlin last week and others about how, you know, you're putting your whole season in jeopardy. You're putting the whole league in jeopardy. You know, if you go out to a club, look at what happened. I'll go back to baseball because it's like the best example right now. Those two Indians pitchers that the team found out was out last weekend, they sent them both home effectively. I mean, they're paying them, but they're effectively suspended, right? So if a team finds out that you're engaged in that kind of conduct, you can be fined, you can be punished, you can be sort of, you know, as happened here, isolated from the rest of your team. So I think the coaches are trying to get that message across any way they can, whether it's by saying you could face punishment, whether it's by saying, hey, guys, if we're the most together on this, we might have a chance to win the Super Bowl because everybody else will be losing players left and right. However that message gets home, then fine, as long as it gets home. And I think if the Cowboys are doing this and they're doing it responsibly, then, yes, you'll see other teams try and follow suit.
Danny, you know, Graziano with Dave Rothenberg, Bart Scott, and Rick DiPietro right here on ESPN Radio. We're talking Cowboys, so let me stay with the theme. How good, in your mind, they signed Everson Griffin yesterday, Alden Smith. We know that Prescott comes into another season with a lot to prove. How good do you think the Cowboys are going to be this coming season? Are they, I guess, are they, in your mind, the second team in the NFC behind San Francisco, or are they one of many teams behind San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, I think one of many. I think, you know, you can't overlook what the Saints still have in terms of the strength of their roster. I'm very curious, as I'm sure everyone is, to see how it comes together in Tampa Bay, but a lot of talent there, obviously. I don't think San Francisco's division is a cakewalk. I mean, Seattle's always tough. I think Arizona will be better. I'm not sure what to make of the Rams. And then, you know, Packers, Vikings, not sure. But I think the Cowboys are in the conversation in terms of, you know, teams that could make it interesting in the NFC. I would personally start with New Orleans. Something weird always happens with them in the playoffs these days, but I think they have the best-looking roster and they have a lot of experience. But, yeah, San Francisco right there, obviously based on what they did last year. And you know, Dallas, to me, Dave, I know you don't want to hear it, but the NFC still looks like Dallas and Philly to me. And you know, no one wins the division 2 years in a row in the NFC East. So if it's Dallas and Philly, you know, history tells us it'll be Dallas. But who knows? You never know. Maybe somebody will sneak up on you.
Well, Dallas is definitely making a run for it. You think about what they did in addressing some needs with Trayvon Diggs and CeeDee Lamb in the draft, then going out to get Everson Griffin so they can have a bit of a rotation. If you get something for Alden Smith, then that's the cherry on top. But why did they decide to go Everson Griffin over maybe Jadeveon Clowney on a one-year deal? Was it basically based off of scheme, being that Everson Griffin has thrived in a 4-3 for so many years, opposed to Jadeveon Clowney, who's more of a 3-4 kind of tweener type of guy?
It may be that, but I think the main reason is the price was right. I don't think Jadeveon Clowney's signing right now for a $3 million deal, right? The $3 million deal and then more incentives. I think they felt like they were getting a really good deal on Everson Griffin, who's an experienced pass rusher who they feel like, you know, can fit whatever they want to do in terms of scheme up front. Cause he's functioning in a number of different ways, but yeah, they are, if they're running 4-3 and he's coming out of Minnesota where they've run 4-3 for a long time, that makes some sense. But I think the more important part, if that's your question, why him not Clowney, is that the number was a number that Clowney's not going to sign for.
I got a little weird follow-up because we see that Alden Smith is coming back and he's a guy who, mm-hmm. you know, has substance abuse problems and got suspended a lot of times. You know, I remember early in the offseason, maybe in March, I had David Irving on. And for those who don't remember who David Irving is, he's a young Chris Jones type of pass rusher that had 7 sacks for Dallas that decided to walk away because of marijuana. I know that he applied for reinstatement. Is it possible that maybe we may get an update and he could potentially be a steal from somebody, being that he's 26 years old, 6'7", with a 7'4 wingspan and had 7 sacks from the interior one season?
Yeah, I know he has applied for reinstatement, according to what he has said. I haven't heard anything from the league on his case, so it's hard to speculate right now. Obviously, an odd case because you say he chose to leave And, you know, he had some things to say when he did. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I think he's out there if the league clears him. You know, the Cowboys signed Alvin Smith before knowing whether he was going to be able to play, and then they're still hoping on Randy Gregory. So it's conceivable somebody could bring in a guy like that. I just haven't heard anything with his name in it for several months.
ESPN NFL insider, big shot, Dan Graziano joins us here on the show. Dan, this is going to be a selfish question. I'm going to admit that. What's going on with Logan Ryan? Any chance that the Jets circle back and consider signing Logan Ryan or even Jadeveon Clowney at this point?
I had heard not to, you know, the Jets weren't going to be in on Clowney. Ryan is another guy whose price hasn't matched up with his desires, right? Like, he's going into the off season, he was looking for a certain number in terms of a contract. A lot of teams see him as a slot corner, and I think he sees himself as more than that, and that's, you know, made it difficult for things to match up. I thought once we saw all the opt-outs come in last week that things might loosen up for some of these guys, and maybe that's what you see with Everson Griffin, because teams are clearing cap space with the opt-outs and maybe some new needs crop up. So, you know, Ryan is a guy I've kind of had my eye on some of the spots with the former New England coaches in them, right? Like the Giants and the Dolphins and the Lions, you know, to have all those guys that used to coach with the Patriots that would know Logan Ryan, but haven't heard much from any of them on him. We heard Logan Ryan to the Jets rumblings earlier in the offseason. It never materialized. So he's another guy like Clowney that people are just kind of sitting there going, not sure what he's waiting for, not sure what he wants. A lot of veterans don't like to go to training camps, so it could be that, you know, these guys are waiting till closer to the season to sign and see if maybe an injury somewhere opens up a spot and the team gets a little looser with their pocketbook as a result. So that's sort of the boat that he's in, and I guess until he's signed somewhere else, you can't fully rule it out. But yeah, definitely an interesting name still kicking around out there.
All right, Dan, we're only weeks away from the start of the NFL season. Hopefully we're full steam ahead and we get there without any issues. Good stuff as always. We'll talk to you, buddy.
Hoping right along with you guys. Take care.
All right.
Keyshawn Johnson.
Keyshawn, touchdown.
Jay Williams.
Williams, he got it.
And Zubin Mahente.
We are back on SportsCenter. ESPN reported.
Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin. Mornings, coming Monday. To the all-new ESPN Radio.
Bobby Carpenter joins us here, my former co-host here on ESPN Radio, now currently on Carpenter and Rothman up in Columbus. So, Bobby, welcome aboard, and we want you to kind of
did it survive, Bobby? Did it survive? Did you go kick COVID's ass?
COVID's hanging in there, man. It's hanging tough, but I think I've been battling pretty good, Bart. Good to talk to you and Dave this morning.
All right, and Rick DiPietro as well with us. So do you understand? I know that you're a proponent that they should be playing football in the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Do you understand the other side, though, of why they decided to not play this upcoming season?
I understand that, obviously, there's inherent risk in everything, and, you know, you can point to a number of different, you know, potential liabilities, but, you know, I fail to see, you know, the disconnect, from students moving into dorms two at a time into small, you know, rooms that, you know, 300-400 square feet, 500 square feet tops. You're going to have two people packed in there that come from different cities, different states, different areas of the country that they're going to be living there, and you're going to expect them to be able to social distance in a room where it's probably not even physically possible, to where you have thousands of that happening, and then, you know, hundreds or 100 football players, so you're going to get tested multiple times throughout the week. They're working out with heart monitors on. They've got body temperature monitors on. They're doing all these things to insulate them and provide them the best medical care that you possibly can. And so, yeah, could something potentially happen? Absolutely. And, you know, the myocarditis has been brought up, and that's why I was glad to see the Big 12 came out and said, listen, before you return to play, you're going to have an EKG, you're going to have an echocardiogram, we're going to do a blood test, we'll do a cardiac MRI if possible, to try to mitigate every single thing that could potentially go wrong. Is there risk? Absolutely. There's always going to be inherent risk in things. But my biggest problem is, I guess, is the fact that they put all this stuff in place. And if you look across, you know, the college football landscape, most of the schools, as outside of early on, have done a really good job maintaining low numbers, and that's due to the fact that these student-athletes have accepted that responsibility. They've acted highly responsible with respect to themselves, their teammates, and their peer group, And now you're not even going to let them say, hey, let us prove that we can continue to do this into the season. And you know what? If it blows up, it stops. We'll shut it down, but at least make the effort to try.
Hey, Bobby, but, you know, we would all agree that one thing we know about universities, head coaches, and administrators is they love money, right? And we know that they love money. The fact that they're willing to give up $100 million means that they may know something that we may not know, or it may be a risk that they're not willing to take. Presidents don't want to have a death on their watch because it goes on their permanent record and they have to wear it like the scarlet letter. But also when you think about, you know, potentially when you talk about, you know, the kids coming back to school, we know that's big money too. But guess what? We all know, and sometimes we have to take the gray out of things. We know that they don't care about those students because guess what? Nobody knows who those students are. If a professional athlete, if a collegiate athlete, you know, was to get sick and get hurt, the whole world is going to know, and everybody's going to pinpoint and point the finger directly at that university saying that, hey, they put these kids at risk. And I just think that presidents don't want to they don't want to take that liability because the thing about concussions and us knowing that we can get hurt, you know, guys die of heat stroke all the time. You know, we always have deaths sometimes, and if not college football, in the high school levels every year. The difference is we don't know what the long-term effects of this disease is going to be and what the liability potentially can be and who's going to underwrite this insurance that they're going to have to probably carry to make athletes and parents feel comfortable with, you know, what's going on with the situation if something wrong happens. I always bring up chickenpox, right, because we know they come back in our lives potentially as shingles. I think maybe they just want to, you know, punt and maybe get some more information to decide to say, you know what, let's not put the kids at risk.
No, that's a good point, Barton. There's two pieces of that. You know, number one, if they were worried about the long-term effects, that was going to be the case in April. That was going to be the case in August. So just come out in April and say, we're not going to know enough about the long-term effects, and so we're not going to be able to have the season. My problem is they kept up this ruse and had the guys continue to work out and do everything and ask them to be responsible and to do all these things and to make these sacrifices for 4 months of their life to prove to them when it was already cooked anyway. And then also you talk about, you know, the high-profile nature of athletes. It's sad that you said that they don't care if 50 students on a dorm room floor get it and have issues 10 years down the road or one of them dies. Like, that liability to a college professor or college president is less than it is for a student athlete, maybe because it's not as publicized. So, I mean, I was always of the belief that every life was precious, regardless of what people deemed its inherent value to be. And that's a sad statement. You're right in saying that. I wish there would be more transparency to come out and say that and to let them know. But I guess my problem is the parents know all the risks. The student-athletes know all the risks. They're the ones that would be absorbing all the risks. The people that are making decisions, the presidents, you're talking about the universities losing hundreds of millions of dollars. Not, those presidents, they're still getting paid. The ADs, they're still getting paid. Kevin Warren, he's still getting paid. That's why you see professional athletics going, because there is risk on the ownership side for the people that are running it of not having a season. Right now, you're just stripping away the opportunity for these student-athletes with no repercussions on the other end for potentially loss of a season for the administrators, because they're still going to be whole on a salary regardless.
Now, do you think that it's okay that the compromise is the fact that the student-athletes are going to get opportunity to push pause on their career and still get the 4 years or 5 years that they were guaranteed when they signed that contract? And listen, I wish we can get to a point as well when we can talk about the fact that all people are created equally, all industries are. It's not a difference between a high-profile person and a person that's, you know, considered a civilian. But we know that's the reality of it. And we know that the fact that these universities really start hurting once they couldn't charge students for tuition and room and board, which is a huge part. The real estate game is a huge part of how much money universities make. So we know that, you know, it's a sad statement, but it's true. And I wish people would just take the gray out and speak transparently about what it is. If we're in this whole new era of honesty and transparency and keeping it real.
No, you're right. Just come out and say that. Like, that's all I'm asking for. If you made a decision based upon that, that's cool. Just say that and let it be known. The fact that you're talking about the scholarship pause, like, that's great. If the student athletes wanted to opt out, they were going to have that opportunity anyway to still receive all their benefits and still get a year paused on their eligibility. So now having that year paused moving forward, here becomes the inherent problem with that, is now there's going to be asymmetric scholarship numbers across the NCAA because you're still going to have to honor the kids who have already signed who are coming in. You're not going to just push them out. And as you know this, Bart, it's all about that fine line of opportunities. And so let's say that you were supposed to be the guy who was next up as a starter after this season and the guy was leaving. Well, all of a sudden now he's coming back. He stays another year. Maybe you're getting pushed from the behind. You get nicked up, and you never get that opportunity to play. And so now your window has been compressed due to the fact that there's larger numbers around you, and you may never get the chance to see that. And, like, Joe Burrow came out and talked about it. Like, if he doesn't have last season, he might be looking for a job. He was probably a fourth or fifth round pick at best, and all of a sudden he's a Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick, just because of one season to start in college football.
I hate to keep jumping in. I want to give my other guys opportunity to say something. But I think another compromise can be making it a gap year for every high school student comes in. They're able to be a collegiate student, but they get a gap year where it doesn't count for them, and all they can do is practice. No matter how good that prospect is, they have to. We can theoretically push pause on the whole season and on the time clock by allowing guys to come in and make it a gap year and say, hey, they can practice, they can go to school, but they can't play. And then that doesn't put the pressure on the other athletes, because that is like this year never happened.
No, Bart, that's a great comment. It's a great solution potentially. But here's the one issue with that. And actually, I think that would be great for some students in football. It might work better, especially for offensive linemen, guys who are, you know, a little bit underdeveloped physically to come in and be able to do that. But I look at college basketball where you have kids reclassifying from juniors to seniors so they can get to college faster, so they can start their clock on trying to get to their professional career. So I don't know if a one-size-fits-all thing is going to work. And so maybe that's an opportunity to talk about if a student wants to take it. But guys like to play in games, man. They like to compete. And I didn't get redshirted, and thank goodness. Like, I feel like I would have gone crazy if I wasn't able to play at all. Being injured was just tough enough when it's a couple weeks. So a whole season of that is tough. Not that it's not a possibility, but I don't know if it's fully productive for every single situation.
Bobby Carpenter joins us here on the show. So, Bobby, obviously, you know, your ties to Ohio State, and they're now looking at maybe January potentially to start their the spring season. How feasible do you think a spring season actually is for college football?
I don't think it's feasible at all, because anybody that's going to leave is going to leave. So you're going to have a watered-down product, especially if the three other conferences go. Like, you're playing to win championships. And so if I'm not getting a chance to play to win something, and I'm not even playing the best players in my conference, like, I have a hard time wanting to do that and having any desire to put myself at risk. Oh, and then turn around, take 4 months off, 3 months off, and play another 12 or 13, 14 games. Like, you're talking about the safety of players trying to play over 20 games, 25 games for an amateur athlete over 9 months. Like, that's not helping them either.
Bobby Carpenter with us here, former Ohio State linebacker, co-host of Carpenter and Rothman in Columbus. Last one, and we'll let you run, and we appreciate the time. Put it into words, because I don't know that people can really understand. What is it like in Columbus now? I mean, it must be because we know the fanaticism and just love they have for that football team and that university. What is sports talk radio like right now in Columbus? What is the fan base like right now of Ohio State?
You know, I wasn't there when Don McLean wrote American Pie, but it's a little bit the day the music died in Columbus. I mean, they've been playing football here through the Spanish flu, through World War One, through World War Two. It's been since, I want to say 1895, that there hasn't been a football season in the fall in Columbus. And people are just in a sad state. It was anger, frustration. You're going through all the steps of grief. And I think despair is finally beginning to set in.
All right, Bobby. Listen, we appreciate it. Keep your head up, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Dave, Rick, Bart, thanks, gentlemen. You have a great morning.
All right, we appreciate it.
Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahinte.
Our show is going to be about sports, sports, and sports.
Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin. Mornings. Coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.
And let's bring in our next guest, Rob Ninkovich, on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Rob, a lot of areas to cover with you here in a couple of minutes. Let's start out with this, and good morning, of course, to you. The Patriots, your former team, what are your expectations for them this year? A lot of guys have opted to not play due to the illness. New quarterback in a new system with not a lot of practices, but it's still Belichick, and it's the potential of Cam Newton. What do you think New England is this year?
Well, you said it. It's Bill Belichick and Cam Newton. I think that my expectations are they're going to have another opportunity to win the division, and they haven't lost it in 11 years, which is pretty crazy to think about that, you know, that team has been able to win the division every single year, year in and year out for a long, long time. You know, you look at Buffalo and they're improving and they're transitioning with a young quarterback. They're going to be a team that's going to definitely be one of them up in the top of the division. And other than that, I mean, there's pretty much a lot of question marks. You look at the Jets, they've had a lot of question marks, you know, moving forward this season. The Dolphins are obviously, you know, trying to have a better season than it did last year with a new head coach who did a good job last year. So, you know, the Patriots are going to be right up there in the division and competing to win the division because they have Bill Belichick and Cam Newton.
Well, we know in a shortened season, it comes down to coaching. And in football, I think the disparity in, like, the football acumen in between a new coach and an older coach that kind of understands situational football. And one thing I always appreciated about the Patriots is that you knew that they were well coached, and it was more about execution than trying to out-scheme all the time. With that being said, what do you think, or how excited do you think Josh McDaniels is, the fact that he has a new toy, a way to modernize the Patriots system and offense in ways that he couldn't do because of the physical limitations of Tom Brady?
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh is excited to change things up a little bit. There's always going to be challenges in having a new quarterback under center with just understanding situations. And, Bart, you understand that games are won and lost in one or two plays coming down to situational football. And I think that that is where the challenge is going to be with the coaching staff of the Patriots, to have a lot of these new guys understanding situations and knowing when things pop up unexpectedly. And I think that's when Bill is at his best, going through old film, getting everybody prepared for situations. And week in and week out, there's going to be a new game plan, and it depends on who you're playing. So, you know, defensively, they lost a couple key guys, you know, opting out with Hightower and Chung. You know, those guys aren't going to be there. And then offensively, you know, you don't know what they're going to look like. Is it going to be a different Patriot offense that we've never seen before? My guess is, definitely yes, because they're going to have Cam Newton under center, a different quarterback that we have basically never seen in New England. But I'm sure Bill and Josh are both excited that they have basically an extra running back on the field in the red zone. And you're going to see a lot of 11-on-11 football when it gets close to the end zone. Cam Newton's going to keep that thing and go straight in for, you know, those power runs that basically they've never been able to do when you have Tom Brady as your quarterback.
Rob Ninkovich joins us here on the show. Rob, you're a Big Ten guy. What are your feelings on the Big Ten deciding to postpone the fall season?
I feel bad for the football players. You know, I mean, look, when you're a young guy and all you live is football, I mean, football is your motivating factor for a lot of things when you're a young athlete. And it helps you go to school. It helps you get your grades. It helps you make all the right choices. So I feel for the kids that aren't going to have a football season. I understand that, you know, these decisions are being made for the best interests of the health and safety of everybody. But at the same time, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, and you don't have that thing that really keeps you motivated to do the right things and make the right decisions and go to all your classes and make sure you're, you know, on top of your grades. I'm concerned that, you know, there's going to be guys that don't take things as seriously as they should when they would have football in their lives. Because when you have football, it means so much to you. You try to make all the right decisions, not only for yourself, but for your teammates. So without that, you know, I hope that we don't see a lot of guys that, you know, let their grade slip or, you know, don't make the right decisions off the field.
Rob Ninkovich joining us here, ESPN NFL analyst. Just one more minute and last question for you, Rob. It seems so curious, doesn't it, that you have two conferences that just won't play and three conferences that are going to push ahead and forge ahead and say we're going to play football. How does that happen, I guess is my question.
It doesn't seem right, honestly. It doesn't seem fair. You know, you're a D1 athlete. You're at a Big Ten school, and you're looking at, you know, another school, and they're playing. And your basically dream is to go out there if you're a senior – have a good senior year, I mean, look, if I didn't have a great senior year, I wouldn't have been invited to the combine. I would have been drafted. So you're looking at basically your future, your hopes, your dreams, everything you've worked for to just to go out there and put a product on a field to have some tape to where a college or a professional, sorry, scout or somebody can see your tape and give you an opportunity. So, I mean, I don't get it. It seems like dominoes. It looks like, I mean, for me, I feel like it's a domino effect. And, you know, these other conferences, the Big Ten canceling their season is going to put more pressure on other conferences to make that decision as well.
Very strange stuff. We appreciate a couple minutes, Rob. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. You too. Take care.
Your mornings are about to become unfiltered.
Don't try to manipulate me because you're not going to win in that situation.
G-Sean, Jay Will, and Zubin. Mornings coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN senior college football writer, joins us here on the Shell Point Pennzoil Performance Line. Adam, so much to do. So many things are happening right now. But I heard yesterday, it seems like a lot of these Big Ten schools were almost blindsided by this decision to postpone the season. From what you've heard, is there any truth to that?
Oh, I don't think anyone should be blindsided. If that's the case, then they weren't communicating very well. I mean, I spoke with Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith yesterday, and you guys all know Ohio State's position on this. They wanted to push forward. They felt like they could. They felt like the Big Ten should have waited a little bit. But, you know, Gene told me that this is where he saw the league ending up, which was postponing the fall season. And, you know, even though there was a lot of emotion on Monday, you know, I think this is the likely landing spot. So, you know, it's always jarring when it happens. And I know coaches were focused on the start of preseason camp and trying to get ready for a Labor Day start. But, you know, I think if there was proper communication between coach, athletic director, and university president, at least on Sunday, that this shouldn't have been a big surprise if the Big Ten ended up here.
Okay, so we know the what, but did the league give the why? Did they give the why they decided to not move forward? And what is the why? Is it because of the heart condition, or is it, you know, and it was because they had 10 cases within their conference, or is it some other things that we may not know?
Right. So I don't think they relayed the why as well as they should have. I think there should have been more transparency from their medical group that's been advising new commissioner Kevin Warren. You know, their sports medicine group also, he's had extensive conversations with them. But, you know, unlike the Pac-12, they didn't release any medical documentation. They didn't put any of their doctors out to talk with the media. So I think that's been probably an error in this, is that, you know, Kevin Warren's done a few interviews but not offered a ton of specifics. I think they've said it's really a combination of factors. Certainly the new information about myocarditis and long-term effects of those who have had COVID-19, including some Big Ten athletes who had COVID-19 earlier this year, is concerning and troubling to the university president. I think the absence of rapid, reliable testing and just not knowing that everybody you're sitting on the field every Saturday is going to be negative for COVID-19 is an issue. I think, you know, the community spread in some of these areas is an issue, especially with campuses reopening and not having in some cases all the quick turnaround if you're going to have these tests. So that's there's just also a lot of unknowns that they just weren't comfortable with going forward. I mean, you saw they had an announcement on Monday about contact practices and basically keeping guys only in helmets. So they didn't want to go to the contact phase. They didn't feel like they were ready to do that. And that was similar in the Pac-12. Just at this point in time, they did not feel comfortable going forward with everything you have to do to prepare for a season. But I don't think the messaging was as strong as it could have been, especially after everybody, you know, not everybody, but several prominent coaches in the league spoke out on Monday about why that they should go forward.
ESPN CF college football writer Adam Rittenberg, excuse me, joins us here on the show.
All right.
Adam, I mean, with what we're seeing and kind of, you know, everyone so focused on the fact that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have decided to postpone the season, I mean, how bad a look is this for college football that you have, you know, such a lack of uniformity, that you have three conferences deciding to play and then you have two that have decided not to?
It's not a good look, but it is college football. Anyone who's studied the sport, at least in the last couple of decades, realizes that there's not much central anything in this sport. I mean, they had a hard time deciding on a playoff format together, and much less trying to return amid a pandemic. And I think while there was hope that they could make announcements regarding scheduling and make decisions regarding competition together, I just never had very much confidence they'd be able to do so. And, you know, in talking to some in the medical community or even in the athletic training community recently, it's like you're all looking at pretty much the same information as far as everyone's dealing with the same virus. It could be more severe in some areas. It could depend if you're in a metro area like some of the Pac-12 schools are, or if you're in a more rural area, but you're basically dealing with the same information. Why is it being determined or interpreted so differently? And again, I think certain groups of presidents may have a different level of risk tolerance. That was something that was told to me yesterday, that, you know, based on their advice from their own doctors, they may feel like they can go on, whereas the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and some of these other leagues have decided they can't go on, at least for the fall.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN senior college football writer, joining Rothenberg, Scott, and DiPietro here on ESPN Radio. For the most part, Adam, the people I've heard speak on this say that it's a pipe dream. You're not going to get football in the spring from the Pac-12 or the Big Ten. Are you on board with that? It's very unlikely we'll see football from those two conferences this year?
I that was my inclination, and I haven't been a fan of the spring season. But now that it's a reality and work is being done, I think it's at least worth a try. You know, I just tweeted out a proposal I got from Purdue coach Jeff Brohm, who spent a lot of time thinking about how it would work in the spring and then also the fall of 21. And so he's put thought into it. Ohio State coach Ryan Day had a lot of details yesterday on a media call about how he wants to see a season start right after the first of the year that would wrap up before the NFL draft, and that would allow, you know, obviously a lot of Ohio State players who are going to be in the NFL next year to at least play a final season with their team. So, you know, now that this, you know, quote-unquote last resort is the only resort, I do think the Big Ten owes it to all the athletes to put some time into figuring out, can this work, and is the situation going to change enough from a health and safety standpoint that the presidents could end up being okay with allowing competition in the spring. But, you know, in talking to a number of people in the league, at least in the Big Ten, they're going to at least attempt this, and they should. I just think the question is, will the presidents and the medical advisors, you know, change their view of whether it's safe to go forward?
Yeah, well, isn't that assuming a lot? That's assuming that we have this pandemic under control. We have therapeutics, maybe a vaccine, and it'll be safer for those same athletes to take the field, you know, be it, you know, 6 months, you know, after they were supposed to. And then in another question I would have, if that's the case, why would we want to put these athletes at risk playing two football seasons within one calendar year, understanding that it takes 3 months, sometimes, you know, even longer, to recover and heal from the inflammation and the pain that happens, you know, from playing, and somebody maybe potentially having to have surgery or getting injuries or, you know, blowing an ACL out, and then now when it's time for their final season, they can't play the real season where they have opportunity to win a national championship. And if that's the case, what's the additional compensation? Because if you want me to play two seasons in one calendar year, then I know that we're doing that for maybe some of the TV money. Are some of these coaches willing to maybe furlough or take a pay cut and some of these astronomical salaries that they get and maybe kick some back to some of the athletes because they're playing, you know, and raising money for the university and for the conference, but they're not properly being compensated for being thrown out there and putting themselves at risk doing something that their body has never been asked to do. And when that happens, the body almost surely will break down.
Right. No, those are all very valid points. And, you know, again, is this realistic? I don't know. Is it realistic in an environment where athletes aren't being compensated? It's going to be tough. You know, again, I think Ryan Day's plan is interesting in the sense that it does possibly wrap up before the end of March. And so at least you'd have April, May, June, July, August. And if you delay the start of the fall 21 season, which I don't like, but it's probably a reality, then you're maybe starting in October. Is that enough time off? It certainly isn't in the injury factor, and that's what I really worry about. Is someone gets injured in the first spring season or winter season, whatever you want to call it, and in a normal situation, even if they had to have surgery, they would be back for a season. But because the next season is coming up in the fall or late fall, then they're going to miss, you know, portions or you know, of two seasons or all of one season and most of the first season. That's really unfortunate. I don't know how you get around that. But it does sound like, you know, the players would, you know, that these coaches are talking to would like to at least attempt the spring season, especially for the seniors. And Ryan Day talked about this yesterday, that he would like the mid-year enrollee freshmen to be eligible for this first season and essentially have 2 years in one calendar year, which would only count for one eligibility year for them. So we'll see if that's even allowed and if the NCAA would go forward with that. But I think there's definitely some energy around this idea in the Big Ten, because the thought of having no football for an entire calendar year, or academic year, I should say, is just really daunting.
Yeah, but Adam, why are we only now having these kind of conversations? Like, why wasn't
Great
this
point.
Something that was considered,
yeah.
you know, months ago?
Yeah, I mean, the quote from Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith to me yesterday was, "We were not talking about. We spent no time on this. None." Now, that's not entirely true, at least from the coaches, because, you know, in reading Jeff Brom's proposal, he mentions what Jim Harbaugh wants, and I think the coaches had some input here, at least, or some thought to this. But that's where maybe the surprise happened, and the lack of communication. They should have spent more time, just that, you know, given where we are in this country with the virus, and given the communication with the medical group, even something like contact tracing, guys. And this is a big topic that isn't being discussed enough. I have had talked to coaches in the last few days who have said, because of the contact tracing restrictions, not because I have 40 positive tests on my team, but because of the contact tracing restrictions, which in some cases are state to state, some are county to county, and some are federal, I can't play right now. I had a group of five coach tell me, if we were at the season right now, I'd have to forfeit the next three games because I have one offensive lineman who's not in contact tracing. And that's a reality that I think the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 and all those that are saying they're going forward, they have to be very realistic about that and how difficult it's going to be if somebody comes out of a game and tests positive for COVID-19 and you're the center. You guys know how football is. Everybody's in contact with the center. Everybody's in contact tracing then for 2 weeks unless that changes. So this season in the fall, I know everybody's excited in the SEC and those leagues, but it could be a mess if that element isn't adjusted.
All right. Adam, listen, we appreciate it. I hope you get to do some work this fall, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate it.
Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahinte.
What happens? Anybody can tell you what happened. What does it mean? Less people can do that. But we're going to focus on what happens next.
Coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Tim Bontemps. Tim is in the bubble, ESPN NBA writer. So, Tim, before we get into the machinations of what has to happen for certain teams to get in, give us some insight. What is life like for a reporter in the bubble?
Well, I'm kind of in a little different situation than, like, say, Malik Andrews and Woj and a lot of our other people here. I'm in the second tier. There's two tiers. So tier one, where those guys are, then go to press conferences, they can interview the players, then go to practices and shoot-arounds. I'm in the second tier where, like, our broadcast crews are. So I can go to the games and watch the games, but I can't interact with anybody for more than, like, 20, 30 feet away. So it's a pretty strange experience. I mean, it's strange being at games with no fans, though obviously pretty fun to be back at basketball games again and not be a science reporter anymore like I was the past few months. But beyond that, it's just kind of a surreal experience to be kind of at this thing, but still like a step removed from it, if that makes sense.
Tim, when you look at potential matchups, is it safe to say that the Lakers would rather not have to see Portland in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to say. You know, this to me is the worst possible draw for the Lakers. You know, maybe depending on what happens to Russell Westbrook's quad. But, you know, this Portland team is a veteran team. Dame Lillard is as hot as anybody in the league. The Lakers have no one to guard him. The Blazers have a ton of size to throw at, you know, the Lakers' bigger lineups with, you know, when they try to put out Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, obviously Anthony Davis. You know, guys like Nurkic and Hassan Whiteside could be a deterrent for LeBron James at the rim. And they're just not going to be afraid. I mean, this is a veteran, experienced Portland team that was in the conference finals last year. They're not going to be overawed by playing LeBron and the Lakers in the first round, like, say, you know, a Phoenix team that's been in the playoffs in a decade might be, or a Memphis team that has a bunch of guys that haven't done anything might be. You know, and then they potentially would have to play Houston and then the Clippers. So, you know, to me, if it shakes out that way, that's about the hardest possible path the Lakers could have drawn. And that coupled with the kind of uneven play they've had through conceding games would have me pretty concerned at this point if I was a Laker fan about their chance of making a deep playoff run.
How difficult would it be for the Memphis Grizzlies to kind of be right there and not be able to win a game to put themselves into a postseason play? How disappointing would it be, you know, to a young star like Ja Morant?
Well, given, Bart, the fact that I don't think Milwaukee is going to play very hard today, it would be pretty disappointing if Memphis can't find a way to at least get into this play-in game. With Giannis Antetokounmpo suspended for today, he probably wasn't going to play anyway. Given it's Milwaukee's last seeding game, I suspect they're going to sit a lot of people. Mike Budenholzer also is Taylor Jenkins' mentor in the business. He's been on his staff the past several years. This certainly sets up for Memphis to have an extraordinarily winnable game. And if they can't find a way to beat Milwaukee's B team to at least get into the play-in tournament at all, I would think that's going to be pretty tough. Though, you know, I know Memphis has had a bit of a rough run here, but, you know, with Jaren Jackson Jr. and you mentioned Ja Morant, I feel pretty good about their chances of being an awfully good team for a long time as those two develop.
Live from the bubble, Tim Bontemps joins us here on the morning show. Rothenberg, Scott, and DiPietro with you on ESPN Radio. We've seen some injuries now. Embiid hurt yet again. TJ Warren, which is not an injury I thought I would ever bring up for you, but that's seemingly a pretty important injury now. Russell Westbrook as well. Do you look at this as the long layoff for these injuries, or is this just coincidental and just normal wear of play?
I think it's pretty coincidental for the most part. I mean, obviously there's been, you know, the Jonathan Isaac injury was very disappointing, right? Obviously him, you know, really blown out his knee and his ACL and his meniscus. I mean, that's a long-term, pretty devastating injury. But, like, you know, TJ and Domantas Sabonis dealing with plantar fasciitis, like a lot of guys in the NBA deal with that. And, you know, Joel's had some bumps and bruises, but, you know, I mean, Joel, he seems to get hurt like once every few games, you know, so like him going out of a couple games with some precautionary stuff, I don't really think that's too anything out of the normal. Obviously, the Ben Simmons thing obviously is really bad news. It'd be nice to see Celtics Sixers with a fully loaded Sixers team, but that was just kind of a freak injury. Like, I was at the game for that, and he just landed and messed something up in his knee. Like, I'm just not even sure how it happened. It wasn't like it was even a crazy play. So, I think generally the league's got to feel pretty good about this. That, you know, injuries have been relatively low. There's obviously no virus. The games have been competitive. I think generally, if you ask the NBA, how has this gone compared to your expectations, they'd have to feel really good about it.
Let's stop and talk about the Sixers for a moment. Is the process flawed, and is it time maybe for them to move on from one of their transcendent talents, whether it's Embiid or Simmons? And if so, who do you think is the likely candidate to be moved? Because I think now, arguably, their value won't be as high as it is now that they're both in their prime. But it just doesn't seem to click and work. You know, you think that Boston's still better than them. Toronto, even if they lose Kawhi, is better than them. And we know that the Milwaukee Bucks are the cream of the crop over there in the Eastern Division.
I would say the process actually wildly succeeded, which probably a lot of people would be surprised to say, in that, you know, everybody's kind of derided it at this point, and I understand why. But the whole point of that was to get as many bites at the apple to get star-level players as you can. And the Sixers got Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid out of it, who are two of the 20 best players in the league. So I would say from that standpoint, it worked. Now, to your point, Bart, does the fit with Joel and Ben work as well as you would like? So far, it has not. Is the roster maybe ideally suited to their talents? No, I would say it probably is not. Are there things you can try to do with that? Perhaps, but, you know, I think if you ask people around the league, I think people think it would be more likely that they would change coaches before they change talent because, you know, look, in the NBA, at the end of the day, you win with talent. And those two guys, while they might be a clunky fit, are supremely talented players. And I would think that the Sixers would do everything they can to try to maximize their talents together before they decide to try to split them off.
ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps joins us here on the show. Tim, last one from me. And I'm going to ask this question for Bart because he's got a bet going on with the Lakers and the Clippers.
Yes.
is there any concern? I saw Kawhi kind of limping around yesterday. Still had a good game. But is there any concern with the Clippers and if they're going to have enough time to get the continuity they need to make a deep run into this playoffs?
What's your bet, Bart? Who do you have?
Oh, I got Chris Canty. I got the Clippers for 5 G's.
You're gonna win the bet.
Wow.
I feel extremely confident about that. I mean, the Clippers have been, I think, have been the superior team all season. To answer your immediate question, no, I mean, I could be wrong. I didn't see anything that was really an issue with Kawhi last night. I was at that game. Kawhi, even last year when they were winning the title, the way he walks around, he kind of always looks like he's limping. His hands are huge, and he also just, you know, with the injuries, you know, with the quad thing he's had and stuff, he just, this kind of the way he walks. I mean, I can't tell you the number of games I was covering when he was in Toronto last year. People would text him and say, hey, is Kawhi hurt? It looks like he's limping. And they're like, no, he's just walking around. So he's looked really good down here. His, like, you know, like per possession numbers and stuff are as good as anybody who's been here. He looks healthy and ready to go. Paul George looks really good. I think the Clippers going to the playoffs, to me, as the clear favorites to win the title. And I think if they don't, it would be disappointing because they have a deep roster. They've got two studs on the wing. Kawhi's obviously proven in the playoffs he can be the best player on the planet. You know, I feel very good about your side of the bet, especially after seeing the way the Lakers have struggled down here.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for taking sides with the wager. We appreciate it. Enjoy the bubble.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right.
Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahente.
You and me got the best seat in the house to listen to these guys tell us about the most pressurized moments in sports.
Mornings, coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.
Jeff Passan. Jeff, let's ask you the question. Do you think it wouldn't be as big of a deal now if Houston owned it back when the punishments came out?
I would like to think that is true. I would like to think that everybody's, like, best judgment would be used here. But no, I don't think that's actually the case. And I was – here's the thing. I was down in Florida for, like, an interminable amount of time at Astros camp this spring. And so the day that the apology was happening, I was there the days before, the days after. I saw all of it in person. The idea that there were not – like contrite apologies that day is just not true and not correct. It's that people didn't want to see it. Like they just did not want to believe that the Astros were capable of doing that. And I understand Alex Bregman looked bad and Jose Altuve looked bad and, Jim Crane looked absolutely terrible. But the idea that there was no contrition there just isn't real. I think there was. I just don't think it was to the level that was going to satisfy the bloodlust that existed for the team.
Well, see, I don't think it's nothing that they could have said, but I think it's something that Major League Baseball could have did. If they would have handed down extreme penalties, then I think they would have said, hey, people felt like they got what they deserve. Because they're saying, hey, you want a title out of this scandal, and you're going to be immortalized forever, and you cheated the game. And not only did you cheat in the game, affect, you know, your record and your narrative. If I'm a guy like I'm forgetting the pitcher from the Dodgers, Dice K. If I'm Dice K, I'm pissed off because I had an opportunity to become a hero and maybe, you know, live my career in the Sunshine State, you know, in L.A. and be a hero. But now I come off as a cast off because I feel like you maybe knew what I was throwing.
Admittedly, Yu Darvish ended up getting like $125 million, so he did okay.
Yeah, but not all $125 million are the same, depending on where you live. You know what I mean? No, I'm just playing.
I don't know, man. I know you made professional athlete money, Bart. I'm a writer, so I'm never going to see $125 million, but $125 million in Kansas and $125 million in California is still a lot of damn money. And that's, listen, Yu Darvish doesn't have a ring. That's the part that he's missing right now, and that's the most frustrating part of it. I think your point, though, about the lack of penalties is 100% correct. I think that's what it was. I don't know that there's anything that the Astros could have said or any amount of contrition that they could have shown that would make up for the lack of penalty that they paid. They were literally given a get-out-of-jail-free card for telling the truth. And, that's something that just does not rest well with players.
So needless to say, Jeff, were you surprised at all that Joe Kelly's suspension was reduced?
No, because MLB's suspension system, like, you have to understand, it is precedent-based. Like, they tend not to come up with these numbers out of nowhere, right? You know, if you hit a guy or if you are believed to intentionally throw at a guy, you get 5 or 6 games. That's just like the way that it is and the way that it always has been. And Joe Kelly's whole argument here was, I didn't hit anyone. I walked away. It's not like I was trying to start a fight here. And, you know, we can take the validity and the truthfulness of that all we want, but the system's the system. And unless you, as Major League Baseball, can make an argument in front of the arbitrator saying that this is way different and, like, 3 games worse than the past, then you're going to lose. And that's exactly what wound up happening.
Jeff Passan with us here, Rothenberg, Scott DiPietro, ESPN Radio, and of course Jeff joins us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Let me switch gears here a little bit. With Stanton already on the IL, not knowing how long he's going to be out for, the Yankees tell us that there's nothing wrong with Aaron Judge. They just took him out for, you know, to give him a little bit of rest the other night, and then he doesn't play last night. Now it's lower body tightness is what they're describing this as. Jeff, how concerned should the Yankees fan be with seemingly an injury to Stanton already in the books and not knowing now about Judge?
Well, I'm turning 40 in a month, so lower body tightness is a very familiar thing to me. I totally understand that. Sometimes you just need a couple of days. Here's the thing, though. If this is September, I am concerned. Right now, it's just like the Yankees are good enough, and there are enough playoff spots where even without Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton for the foreseeable future, I still think they would make the postseason. I still think they would be in a good position to succeed there. But you just got to get your guys healthy. And keeping them healthy over the course of an entire month is a lot easier said than done once you get to October. But as of right now, in this moment, if I'm a Yankee fan, I'm sitting here and I'm frustrated. I'm sitting here and I'm annoyed. I don't think I'm worrying yet, though.
I don't want to talk about the present. I want to talk more about the future. Because Aaron Judge right now with 9 home runs, he shows you, he gives you these glimpses of how great, how special he is. But then he can't do it on a consistent basis. He's 28 years old. And if you're looking at some of the contracts that's been handed out, you know, they've been, you know, close to $500 million. Are you going to commit a long-term contract to Aaron Judge when he's over, you know, older than 30, when you already have a contract like that on the books and he doesn't show the ability to be available for 162?
That has been the question about Aaron Judge. Like, ever since his rookie year, it's never been about ability with him. It's been about durability with him. And, you know, the reality is, you look at the number of games that he's played over the last couple of years, and it's not been a lot. I mean, he's been hurt both of those years. And that is something where he's got to show the ability to stay healthy. And he hasn't done it quite yet. So I don't know how, when you combine that with his age, if you're the New York Yankees, you would sit here and say, we're going to commit $300+ million to him. His age, Bart, was, I think, probably more of a factor than the durability. When it comes to a long-term deal with him, though, it was always going to be the impediment, especially if he's going to hold out for one of those mega deals, as opposed to signing something like before he hit arbitration. And really started getting paid. But we're at that point now. And, you know, free agency is still a couple of years away, but it's close enough now where he can start dreaming of those big money bags. He's just got to get healthy and stay healthy, because without that, he's not going to get the, you know, the Mookie Betts, Mike Trout kind of money. He's going to get, like, the, you know, $200 million range as opposed to something that starts with a 3 or a 4.
All right, Jeff, we got to run. We appreciate it. Hopefully baseball continues to roll along. We'll talk to you at some point in the future.
All right, fellas, appreciate you having me.
Coming Monday.
I think he's going to be special. I just think he's going to be all what they thought he was when they drafted him.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Coming Monday to the all-new ESPN Radio.